Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Nintendo Everything Refresh, the weekly show where we keep you all up to date on everything new and exciting in the world of Nintendo. I'm your host, Nick Serpa, joined today by Nicholas Chade.
Hello, everyone.
Nicholas, it has been an interesting week for Pokemon, hasn't it?
I would say eventful week, but I'm not sure how true that is.
Yeah, maybe not as eventful as a lot of folks had hoped. We're going to kick off this week's episode by talking a little bit about the Pokemon Presents showcase that happened at the start of last week. And then we will get into our regular headlines, some interesting games that came out this week, a bit of a return to the gimmicky Wii motion control days with one of them I'm excited to talk about. And it's going to be an interesting episode. So let's start off with the Pokemon Presents. This was a, I think, relatively anticipated showcase. People were curious to see if we would hear about the new Scarlet and Violet DLC. And we did, a little bit. We pretty much only got a announcement. They didn't really reveal too much about it. Am I right on that, Nicholas?
Yeah, I think for the most part, it's basically the theming of it. We saw some characters' locations, and they showed off a glimpse of some of the Pokemon, I think mostly from the first wave of DLC. But that was the extent of it, really. We didn't get any details in terms of what's going to be happening mechanically, or any in-engine showcases, or what have you.
Right. Yeah, there wasn't even really... They didn't really show a lot of gameplay or anything like that. It really just felt like an announcement of, like, here's more Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, everyone. which is fine. You know, I really think that it's going to be a bit of a harder sell for folks right now, considering the state of the game. And I know they were talking about, you know, there's going to be all these updates and stuff soon, but to me it feels a little premature to be announcing DLC at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there's also the fact that I'm pretty sure the update went out at the time that the presentation happened, and from what I've heard, there were no real improvements to the performance. The raid battles were essentially fixed from what I hear, so that was improved. When it comes to actual overworld performance and other bugs, there wasn't really anything addressed or, you know, better performance or whatnot, so that's a little disappointing, to say the least.
Yeah, so a little bit about this DLC. Again, we don't actually know too much right now, but they're releasing it in two parts, essentially. So part one is called The Teal Mask, and it's apparently... the whole premise is you're going on a school trip, and they're taking players to a new region where you're joining an outdoor study program. So they're going deeper into the school, you know, school sim aspects, maybe? Not like a simulation, but, you know...
That is kind of a clever direction of taking it. If you want people to be exploring new areas, having school trips, and I think the second DLC is transfer students. Like, that's cute ways of kind of tying it into the themes.
It is kind of cool. I mean, I do appreciate that they're kind of going all in on that premise. I want to see more of what these new environments look like, you know, because I think that's part of the appeal, and I'm a little bummed that we didn't really see a lot of that, but you know, the fact that we at least have some details are a good thing. Did we get a release window for either of these DLC packs?
Yes, and it's actually kind of interesting because the release windows are, I believe, fall 23 for the first wave and winter 23 for the second, so they're actually quite a ways away still.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. That's about a year after the original release. And I mean, based on at least what we got with Sword and Shield, they're probably going to be fairly substantial. I mean, I remember a lot of what people were saying with Sword and Shield's DLC were, hey, these are, you know, really compelling add-ons to the point that in some ways they kind of overshadow the main game a little bit in terms of their ambition and, you know, the new kind of approaches and gameplay mechanics that they added. So yeah, it'll be curious to see how these are received when they do come out.
I do think it's interesting that they're coming out later than the Sword and Shield DLC was, because I believe that one released in summer and fall. This is just a season behind on both of those, which, I mean, fair, you know, take the time you need. I just wonder if there's any specific reason why that is, if it's just harder to develop now, considering the whole like fully open world element of the game, but regardless, I don't know how to feel about the fact that there's a price increase on the DLC. Like, it's costing $35 as opposed to the previous highest we've seen from like any of the games on Switch, which has been 30, I believe. I find that a little odd.
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, I'm like, oh, $5 extra, not the end of the world, but it is just a little strange, I feel like. I know, you know, prices in general for a lot of games are going up, and, you know, but Pokemon was a $60 game, and so $35 for its expansion pass does seem a little bit higher than usual. But we'll see, you know. I always try and withhold judgment until things come out. I'm not particularly optimistic about this one, I'm not going to lie, but... Yeah, I know there are a lot of folks out there who are enjoying Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, and so this will give them some extra content for sure.
Right. I mean, credit where credit is due, because I don't think either of us have picked up Scarlet and Violet, and I think we both have issues with how the game is structured and some of its performance and whatnot.
Right.
But if we're comparing this to the Sword and Shield DLC, like you had mentioned, those were genuine upgrades over the main game of Sword and Shield. And I would hope and I would assume that these are probably going to be similar in that respect in regards to Scarlet and Violet, where because they have more time devoted to these specific areas and they can actually, you know, take the time to refine them, these will probably be a better experience in some ways compared to what the main game is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do think, with all that said, this was probably the biggest announcement from the entire presentation. Although, Nicholas, yeah. I don't want to... You 100% got one of your predictions right. I think you were just joking when you said it, but Pokemon Sleep, it returns.
Yeah. Oh. I think I preferred it when it was just a meme, to be honest. Because now that we have it, it's just a sleeping app.
That's like, pretty much it.
I don't entirely understand why this took so long to release with that in mind. Because you look at something like, say, Pokemon Smile... which, you know, it's a similar idea in terms of here's this, like, lifestyle helping app, essentially, that's Pokemon-themed. But that genuinely provided something new and different that's still tied into Pokemon. Like, the whole idea of catching Pokemon by brushing your teeth, even if it's, like, somewhat childish because it is meant for a younger audience, sure. It's still something new. This, from the functionality we've seen, for the most part, it's just a bog-standard sleeping app, like what would come pre-installed on your phone. So I really...
But with Pokemon.
Right, but even the Pokemon like, don't add, go. Like, different what functionality. The Pokemon are the equivalent of, like, a BuzzFeed, like, test. It's not... I don't know. It seems odd to me. I don't understand why this would have taken, what, 4 years to develop if it's this... basic in terms of functionality.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that they're expecting this thing to be a barn-burning success or anything like that. I want to know why it exists in the first place. I mean, I know Nintendo, you know, they had their, you know, quality of life things that they were experimenting with at some point, but as far as I'm aware, Pokemon was never really, like, officially a part of that. So they have to be doing this on their own accord. And, I mean, is there any... Do you know if they're trying to monetize this in any way? I mean, I can't imagine.
I don't know. Well, I mean, clearly it's to sell their new hit accessory, the Pokemon Go Plus Plus.
Yes. Yeah, that's something else. Although, so, okay. I don't really know how to describe this thing, but you remember back when they put out Heart Gold and Soul Silver on the DS, and they had the little Pokewalker accessory? That's kind of what this reminds me of. This, like, physical Pokemon ball-shaped thing that...
Yeah, it's like it's...
But you use it for Pokemon Sleep.
Yeah, it also has, I think, Pokemon Go functionality, where it works like the Pokemon Go Plus, like, accessory that they released a few years back. But this is another one that works with sleep. So, there you go. That's something to spend $40 on if you just need to burn that money in your pocket.
I mean, you know, I guess it's cheaper than, like, an Apple Watch. I mean, people buy those for sleep tracking, so now you have another option. Now you can tuck in
and
a little...
And this one's Pokeball-shaped.
Exactly. I love in the commercial when you see this person going to bed, and they just, like, they put their little Pokeball on the bed and just, like, tuck it in a little bit. They're like, all right, I'm going to bed. Like, I can't imagine doing that. I think my wife would just sleep on the couch if I started putting up a Pokemon ball in our bed every night. Yeah,
a Pikachu that serenades you as you go to sleep.
Now, that's an idea. That's what Pokemon Sleep should have been, Nicholas. Come on. Let's be honest.
Such a bizarre idea. I don't fully understand. I mean, as we said, I don't fully understand why they decided that this absolutely needed to be a thing. But it's here now, so I enjoy it. I assume it'll be a free app, so there's no harm in trying it, at least.
Yeah, I suppose. It's just, I think a lot of folks, I mean, we still have a couple more things to talk about, but people get excited for these showcases because they want to see games, and I didn't really see a lot of excitement over something like this, which was not really a huge surprise to me.
Yeah.
I am a little interested, though, in this new Pokemon TV series that got announced, called Pokemon Concierge, which is such an interesting concept. So the concept of this show is that it takes a break from following the typical Pokemon anime exploits. And what's unique about it is it's focused on a, like, hotel and all the various Pokemon guests who are coming to stay at this resort. And it's done in this really cool, like, stop motion animation style. Looks really unique. Like, it could actually expand the lore of the Pokemon universe in some interesting ways, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm not, like, completely blown away with the concept right now, but I am intrigued. It's certainly something I'll keep an eye on. I think it's also, like, what a time for Netflix to score an exclusive Pokemon show with all the issues they've been having. Like, man. Imagine if they had something like this last year or a couple years ago.
Right. Yeah, I think I'm more interested just because, I mean, we do get a lot of other pieces of Pokemon media, but I feel like most of them are very focused, you know, as makes sense, on, like, the whole dynamic of catching Pokemon and battling. And so it'll be interesting to see what they can do with something that is not really tied to that idea, you know, to see if they can pull it off.
Something that's a bit more focused on just how do people live in a world where Pokemon exist. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why I and probably a lot of other people really enjoyed the Detective Pikachu movie when that came out. Because for all of the, like, action plot beats and whatnot, there was some focus on showing how do people interact with Pokemon in just, like, normal living situations. And that's really fun. That really helps kind of build out the world and make the imagination go run wild. Makes your imagination just run wild.
Yeah, totally. We still don't know too much about this show, but yeah, the fact that it's coming to Netflix is interesting, and I think it's supposed to come out sometime later this year, but they didn't give us a firm release date or anything like that, so we'll see. But yeah, other than that, you know, I mean, that was the bulk of the presentation. We did get some smaller updates regarding the Pokemon trading card game, you know, just but really just nothing major. I don't know, can you think of anything else worth mentioning, Nicholas?
Nope. Man, like, I get it that these are always smaller presentations and they always have a good amount of cross-media representation, like talking about the Pokemon World Championships, talking about all the mobile games, talking about other side ventures, but, like, it still doesn't feel like something they really needed a presentation for.
Yeah.
It's so
weird.
Yeah, I
feel like a lot of it could have been press releases or, I mean, you know, they probably could have just, like, released something like Pokemon Sleep onto the App Store instead of trying to build up some hype around it. I just don't really see it. But I guess now that they have, like, this physical device they need to sell to go with it, which is strange to me. I mean, it kind of makes sense that they had to promote it a little bit. Yeah, I think overall it wasn't what people were hoping for, but it's not like we've had a shortage of Pokemon games recently either, so, I mean, what can you do?
I mean, it's also just bizarre because it felt like there were so many potential things leading up to the presentation. There was the fact that there was Spike Chunsoft mentioned in a list of partners on the website beforehand. I think that got removed the day before, but for a while that felt like it was strongly hinting at them having a presence in the presentation. Possibly with something Mystery Dungeon related, and obviously they didn't. There was a whole bunch of stuff regarding the original games that was kind of hinted at, both in, like, the the announcement of the presentation, they had a bunch of Game Boy references on the site. They had a whole bunch of red, green, blue, and yellow balloons. They put the red and blue music, they released it officially again on their Japanese sound library. Like, there were so many things leading into the presentation. The fact that NSO just got Game Boy and Game Boy Advance games, and yet nothing. And I get the whole, you know, curb your expectations.
Right.
But at the same time, it feels like such an obvious move based on not just what people are expecting, but also what they were doing marketing-wise, that I still feel kind of disappointed about this.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, it's hard not for Pokemon fans to get excited when there's rumblings and stuff, but yeah, I mean, you know,
here's the thing. I didn't even want the Game Boy games to be released on Switch. I don't think I would have played them if they had been, but I just expected that to be announcement because of everything they showed off. So the fact it wasn't is so wild.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Well, luckily we did have some other notable news this week. One thing that will never disappoint me is anytime there's a new wave of DLC announced for Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. I can never be too dismayed about that. So yeah, we have a release date for Wave 4. It is coming March 9th, so less than a week from when you all are listening to this. And we got to look at all of the new courses coming in this new wave of DLC. Some classics, for sure. The big one, I think, for a lot of people is the Waluigi Stadium. That one is, like, a lot of people who played the GameCube one, Double Dash, myself included, have a lot of nostalgia for that one. We've got some new Mario Kart Tour courses, of course. You know, we got one based on Bangkok this time around. We've got one based on Amsterdam. Scrolling through the list here, it's about what you'd expect, I'd say, overall. We got one brand new course that they showed off at the very end, which was originally revealed back in the last Nintendo Direct. It's the brand new Yoshi-themed course. So, you know, nothing crazy. It looks like just another solid wave of Mario Kart DLC.
Yep, I'm definitely looking forward to it. I mean, Mario Kart is Mario Kart, but also there's a few of these tracks that I am pretty interested in. I think Riverside Park looks great. I love the lighting they're using for that. And it's always fun to see the old Game Boy Advance tracks kind of remastered for HD, because they just have to make so many changes to them. And so they come off feeling as something very new. And then obviously Yoshi's Island just looks great. I love the idea that you're actually driving around the overworld of the game. And you have the whole thing where you hit, like, the cloud and you have the red blocks that spawn, like they do in the actual game. It all looks like there's a lot of love and tons of references put into it. And that's also just super fun.
Yeah, it really feels like they've taken a lot of the players' feedback about, like, you know, when the DLC initially came out and people were saying, oh, the visuals don't look quite as good. But man, like, looking at what they were showing off in these trailers, like, all these little details that you're mentioning, you can absolutely see that they've been putting a lot of time and effort into making these courses look good. And I'm with you on the GBA ones. Those ones in particular, which were nothing more than just completely flat, different shaped ovals, you know. they're basically brand new courses this time around. So it's really exciting. And there's Birdo.
Yeah, which is the other cool thing, is they actually said we're going to get more returning characters in other courses. Which is really cool. I wonder who those are going to be. My first guess is Diddy Kong.
Yeah, that's true. Is Diddy Kong not in the base game?
No, he's not in the base game. It's one of the big absences that people have noted and kind of lamented.
Huh. Yeah, I could see that.
But knowing Nintendo, we're probably going to get, like, Queen Honeybee or something.
Which, I mean, would anyone really complain? I mean, that would just be wonderful. Mario Kart DLC is coming very soon, and on the same day, actually, well, one day earlier, technically, but we also learned that people who are subscribed to Switch Online Expansion Pack are getting Metroid Fusion. We knew it was coming, we didn't know exactly when, but they are pushing it out on March 8th, which is a huge deal, because this is one of the games that was going to be lost in a virtual form. With the shuttering of the Wii U eShop. So I'm really glad to see that this one will remain playable somehow on modern systems.
Yeah. And I mean, It feels so natural as well with Dread being out and Dread being just a very direct sequel to Fusion. Having this game available feels like it's going to make a lot of sense. I think at this point, the only games that... Actually, if Return of Samus is going to be available through the Game Boy NSO, I think all of the core 2D side-scrolling Metroids will be available on Switch in some way, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, no, that's the case. Compared to the Wii U, where you could play, like, everything, once we get the whole Prime Trilogy and other M on here, then we'll be good.
Yeah, but I'm glad Fusion is making its way here, too, because that game is just super fun. It was one of the first 2D Metroids that I had played, and it's definitely one that I've heard some people complain about later on, of it just being far more linear in structure, but there's a lot of what it does in terms of its environment and the way it sets up kind of, I don't know if horror is the right word, but like just its ambiance, its atmosphere, is super, super fun. It ends up being just a really memorable experience because of that.
Yeah, no, that's what I've heard too. I've missed this one as well. There was my whole love with Metroid, like it started with Metroid Prime, and so since then, I've been trying to experience more games in the franchise. But having heard about all the story beats that are carried forward, and I'm trying to play through and enjoy the story in order. So I haven't gotten to Fusion yet, but I'm very excited that I have a accessible way to play it now. Mm. And I'm hoping to get through as many of the Metroid games as I can before Prime 4 comes out. Because we don't really know where that one's going to fall in the timeline, and... With the way the original trilogy wrapped up, the Metroid Prime trilogy, I could see them trying to fit it in after Dread somehow, but I have no idea.
It's possible. It's interesting because Prime has kind of gone off into its own timeline, I feel. I think Prime 1 branches off after Metroid 1, and it's also, like, all three of the Prime games are supposed to take place before Metroid 2, I believe.
Right.
Which means, like, it's a very constrained amount of time that they can take place on, unless, like you say, they kind of tie it back into the core series and place Prime 4 somewhere else in the timeline.
Right. Yeah. Well, hopefully someday the game will release and we'll be able to find out. Still not a guarantee, but someday we will all play Metroid Prime 4. It has been, Nicholas, it has been almost 6 years since they announced that game.
Yeah, God, hasn't it been? I think it's been like 4 since they've restarted development, right? We just reached that threshold a few months ago or something.
Yep. Yeah, it was like January 2019. I remember the day I was walking to Starbucks, checking my morning news. I was about to go to class, and then I was so excited I saw on my newsfeed an update regarding the development of Metroid Prime 4, and I was like, holy shit, this is the best Friday ever.
Oh no.
And I read it, and yeah, it became a Friday I'll never forget.
Oh.
It's all good. Alright, let's keep going through these headlines here. We have, believe it or not, another presentation announced, and you may be surprised about the date. I don't think anyone would guess. But March 9th, which is the same day that we're getting, what, like a Level 5 presentation?
The Mario Movie Direct.
Mario Movie Direct. I think Nacon is having a presentation that day as well.
Right.
It's crazy. Well, we're also now getting a Capcom spotlight. And they're promising some talk over quite a few different games. We know for a fact they're showing off the Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Collection. They're going to talk more about Ghost Trick, which was recently announced as getting a Switch port. Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak, because they are still updating that game. And then some other stuff. Resident Evil 4 and Exo Primal, which are not coming to Switch as of right now. So, yeah. Pretty jam-packed showcase, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't think Mega Man Battle Network is that far away. I don't know what they really would have to show for it, considering it's just remastered ports of the existing games, so I don't know what they'll have to talk about then, but I'm excited to learn more about Ghost Trick, just because I don't think we have a price point or release date for that yet, and I don't really expect to see much for Monster Hunter, just because it hasn't been very long since the last title update, and they said that the fifth one would be in April, and it seems very early to be talking about details. So the most I would expect is just like a brief teaser. But regardless, this will be fun. And even if it's not on Switch, I think a lot of people are getting excited for Resident Evil 4. I believe it was recently shown off in a PlayStation presentation a few weeks ago, and that's really kicked off the marketing for it. So it's going to be a lot to talk about there.
Totally. Yeah, and they usually manage whenever, I mean, not always, but usually when companies have these types of showcases, they usually manage to throw in a surprise or two. So who knows? Maybe we'll get something else small.
Yeah, there are so many people online just praying for anything Ace Attorney related. I'm going to feel so bad when there is nothing shown off.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's impossible, honestly. I mean, I could see us getting a small teaser for something new. It's been, what, 2 years since we got the Great Ace Attorney Chronicles? Year and a half, so...
Yeah, that came out in 21. And I mean, the thing is, like, that game, the second Great Ace Attorney game, was the last original Ace Attorney game they've made, and that came out in 2017, I believe. So it's been, like, 6 years since we've actually had a new game. I really do hope there's something Ace Attorney showed off, but I really don't expect it.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it on your bingo card, is what I think we're both saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just with them saying, like, here are updates on these specific games, they don't really have, like, an end more blurb or anything. I don't know how much more I'd expect outside of what's mentioned here. Just kind of, you know, like, just curb expectations, I guess.
Yeah, I think if there had been anything big, they probably would have announced it in the Direct alongside Ghost Trick, is my guess. But yeah, and then our last big kind of headline that I want to make sure we get to is the third wave of Fire Emblem Engage's expansion pass is also coming this week, March 7th in North America and March 8th in Japan. It's actually a fairly busy week for Nintendo. Nothing, you know, really hugely surprising with this wave of DLC. We kind of already knew this going in. It's just going to be some extra emblems and the corresponding missions to recruit them. You've got Crom and Robin making a big return for this one, and Veronica. So, yeah, so nothing huge. I think at this point, most people who are really into that game are probably looking forward to the big story-driven, they're calling it the Fell Xenologue, and that's coming out sometime before the end of the year. Yeah, I don't see a lot of people getting super excited about these emblems.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of extra content, and it's kind of neat that there's going to be some Fire Emblem Heroes representation in the game with Veronica. You know, Fire Emblem Heroes is canon, I guess. But otherwise, canon
enough. Yeah.
It's
probably makes about as much sense as the rest of Fire Emblem Engage's story, from what I've heard.
Honestly. I think it's kind of interesting also how fast they've been pushing out these Emblem DLCs, because the game came out in, like, what, late January, mid to late January, and we already have all of the DLC for it released except for the big expansion. And that kind of makes me wonder, because that doesn't have a release date yet. It just says, like, 2023. So I wonder when they're planning on putting this out, because I can't imagine it would be too much further away if they've already kind of exhausted all of the other content they have for the game.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it does kind of track with, I mean, this game, Fire Emblem Engage, leaked, I mean, months before it was officially announced, and I believe at the time one of the things that came up was like, yeah, like, Nintendo's basically been sitting on this game.
Yeah, I think, and it so got it's possible a rating that they... Its rating was filed in 2021 in Europe.
Okay.
So it had an official, like, age rating as of then, which means it would have to have been almost complete at the time.
Right. Overall, like, at least content complete at that point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's possible that they had just, you know... I think I mentioned this back when we were first talking about this DLC, but... I mean, this totally feels like stuff that could have just been in the base game, so I can't imagine it was a particularly stressful development to make these new emblem characters.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm excited to see how that story expansion plays out and if it's meaningful enough to satiate some of the fans who wanted more story in this one.
Yeah, I mean, the based on what they did for Three Houses, because that had its own DLC story with, I think, the Ashen Wolves was the name of it. And that was pretty good. It was, like, its own self-contained campaign. It was a good, I think, 8 or so different maps. If it's anything like that, I'm sure it'll probably be good.
Yeah, that one was fairly substantial. All right, so let's switch gears here and talk about some of the games that came out this past week. Overall, not a lot of big stuff, but definitely some interesting smaller games. Okay, let's just get this weird one out of the way first, because this was the one I was alluding to at the start of the show. I hope you have some extra toilet paper rolling around in your house, because you're going to need it if you want to play this Switch exclusive, I should note, called Give Me Toilet Paper, in which you place a Joy-Con inside a roll of toilet paper, and you grab some type of board, and you roll it back and forth to do physics-based toilet paper platforming in this game.
Only on Switch.
Only on Switch.
Nowhere else can you experience something this special.
Yeah, you may look insane if someone looks through your window, but, you know, beyond that, I mean, this is the type of experience we all wanted, right?
It's great. This is, you know, Japan. You love it.
In a nutshell, yeah. I don't really know what to say about this other than it's very strange.
It's an interesting use of the Joy-Con gyro. Like, this feels like a sort of concept, at least. I mean, maybe without the toilet paper. But conceptually, it feels like something you could have seen in 1-2 Switch, like, early on in Switch's lifespan. Just showing off what you can do with the controllers.
I was just thinking that myself. I strongly encourage anyone who has morbid curiosity for these types of things to watch the trailer and listen to the song in the background where there's like a Vocaloid singing about toilet paper. It's wonderful. This is the type of exclusive content that we need on the Switch. Other than that, we did actually get some real games announced,
though. I'm sorry.
So that's exciting.
What are you implying there?
You're right. I don't want to snub this one for Game of the Year 2023, but but no, we got some more substantial things. Let's put it that way. NIS America announced another new RPG, hot off the heels of their school superhero one last week that I already figured out the name of. This one is called Cry Machina. Cry Machina. I don't know how would you say that?
I would guess Machina. Or Machina? I don't know.
There you go.
Like Deus Ex Machina, but...
Yeah. Great movie, by the way. okay, we'll go with that. Cry Machina. This is a new science fiction-themed RPG, and the premise overall is humans have gone extinct thousands of years ago, so there's all these synthetic beings called the Shinki that are trying to bring humanity back, and... it is an action RPG, looks very, very flashy. Looks a little bit darker, I'd say, like thematically, than the average NIS America RPG. We don't know too much about it, but I'm intrigued, I would say, by the overall theme of it. I like action RPGs. I find that some of these smaller projects can be really hit or miss. You know, even if they have an interesting theme, they can't always nail the feel, but this looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. I'd say at this point.
Yeah, it gives me some Nier Automata vibes just in terms of the whole, you know, synthetic robot ladies action game kind of vibe. But it looks nice. I think the style and the gameplay especially is just super, super flashy and it looks appealing. Obviously, like you said, we don't know how it's going to feel in practice, but just from a pure visual standpoint, it seems like something you can have fun with.
Yeah. Yeah, which is really, you know, sometimes it's nice to have an RPG-like experience that is not this massive 100-hour investment. You can just kind of turn your brain off a little bit and enjoy some combat. But I don't want to sell this game short. I mean, who knows? It could end up having a really interesting story. I mean, I do like the premise of it. And, I mean, looking at the overall, like, the way they're trying to, like, design the environments and stuff like that, it does seem like they're, like... This doesn't seem like a science fiction, like, fantasy RPG. Like, it seems like they're trying to focus on harder, darker sci-fi.
Yeah.
Which I like. I don't think we get a lot of that in RPGs nowadays. So.
Yeah, it fills a nice little niche.
Yeah, for sure. So that one is coming at some point in the future. Now, this is an indie game that I wanted to highlight because I've heard great things about it. It's called Subway Midnight, and it's a narrative-driven horror adventure experience. The whole premise is you are going through the different trains of this subway car, and something's following you, and you don't really have anything else that you can do except go forward and deal with all these creepy environments and talk with the creepy characters, ghosts, and all that. And it's fills that perfect niche of like that being very kind of spooky and mystery, but also kind of got that cutesy like art aesthetic to it. It's gotten a lot of great buzz on Steam, and so I am very curious about this one.
Yeah, it looks very, very unique. The art style was great, and just kind of, like you said, the way it blends the horror with these very kind of cutesy, fun, colorful, cartoony aesthetics, it's different, and it's enjoyable. It almost feels like some kind of older Cartoon Network show, like a Courage and the Cowardly Dog in a way.
Yeah, a little bit. No, that's a great, like, comparison for the art direction. I remember when this game came out, and you never really know which games that land on Steam, like which ones are going to get big enough so that they eventually get a console port.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this was one of them. So I'm excited to check this one out for sure. And then the last one I wanted to shout out really quick was Trinity Trigger, which we did talk about quite a while ago, I feel like, on this podcast. This is a new, well, not really new at this point, but it launched on the Switch last year. But yeah, this is a new RPG from Marvelous and Exceed Games. It has been worked on by some of the folks who were involved in Xenoblade, one of the character designers, some folks who have worked on Secret of Mana and Octopath Travelers. So I think that was how it initially got a lot of people's attention.
Yep.
They're really trying to look and feel like older, like 90s era RPGs. But it is an action RPG. So even though it's kind of taking a more, I guess, top-down perspective, it sounds like they're trying to make it feel fairly modern. I haven't seen too much about this one that has me super excited, but we know it's coming now on April 25th here in North America.
Yep.
And in May in Europe.
That'll be interesting to see. I think, like you said, despite the kind of all-star cast, I suppose, I haven't seen too much about this that has me completely hooked. A lot of it has kind of just seemed like, oh, this is, you know, kind of your generic but still fun smaller scale RPG. But I'm willing to be surprised. I'm pretty sure there's either a demo that has been out or a demo that's going to release for it. So that would be a way to test it if it is. Otherwise, I'll, wait for reviews. This certainly could have potential.
Yeah, it's again, we always talk about this with these smaller projects, but it can just be a challenging sell, I think. Like, some folks are still going to be playing through, heck, you might even still be playing through Octopath Traveler 2 at that mm-hmm. point, depending on how long that game is. So I think just in terms of, like, the time commitment that a lot of these take, it can be a hard sell. But, yeah, I mean, I do try and keep an open mind. It's just hard for smaller projects like this to stand out sometimes.
There's only so much time of the day to be playing through RPGs.
I know. Never enough time is the unfortunate reality. All right. Well, let's shift gears here one more time. We're going to talk about some of the releases that came out this week. Kind of a similar situation, nothing huge. There's obviously a lot of Nintendo DLC and such coming next week. But still some interesting things worth shouting out here. So the first game I want to highlight is called Void Terrarium 2. This is a sequel to the first one that came out, gosh, I'm trying to think back. I want to say it was 2017, maybe 2018. First one has been out on Switch for quite a while, and I think also came to some other platforms. It might have come to the Vita, if I remember correctly, or it was originally supposed to be a Vita game. I don't know too much about these games. They're top-down, action RPGs, but sometimes there's side-scrolling elements. It's very much got, like, a girl and her robot kind of vibes. It's very kind of surreal and mystical. I don't really know what to make of it. Are you familiar with these games, Nicholas?
Not very. I've seen this one pop up a few times because it was announced, I believe, some point early last year. But I don't know too much about them. They seem like a, like you said, kind of a mix between like a life sim, kind of build this person's home, and then with some action RPG elements where you go out and that's how you obtain the materials to be crafting things, I think.
Yeah, it leans a little bit more into like, it does have some survival elements. They describe it as a caretaking dungeon RPG, which I don't really know what that means.
The hit new genre.
Yeah, it's the new farming simulator, everyone. But yeah, it certainly seems unique. This one does have a demo out if you're curious and want a better explanation than we can give you of what this game is. Yeah.
I will say, I think it has a delightful art style. I really love how this game looks.
Yeah, it's really unique. It reminds me of a lot of the games that would come out back on the PlayStation Vita from NIS and all that.
There's something about the lighting and like the sort of chibi-ish anime aesthetic that has that vibe.
Yeah, for sure. Now this one I do actually know a little bit about, and I can talk about it because I'm curious about this one. So this one is called Meg's Monster. It is presented as an RPG, but it's not really an RPG in the traditional sense. So it kind of flips the tables in that you play as this big monster, and your objective is you're kind of in this little girl's, it seems like her dream world or something like this. And the whole thing of the game is you have like 10,000 health points, but this girl only has like 30. And you have to protect her because if she starts crying, the whole universe just starts disintegrating and falling apart. Which is just like, I feel like that's just a really cool premise for a game. Like, it very much is like flipping the narrative elements of like the traditional like hero, you know, protagonist role. And I don't know, I think this could end up being really, really good.
No, I agree. It has a very, just, it leans into something very different that we don't see much. And it seems like it does it in an interesting way. Like you said, the combat mechanics of you being this overpowered character but having to defend this smaller one, it's almost like escort mission-esque, but I think in a way that's probably a bit more palatable. It almost has kind of Undertale vibes in that it seems like the way you would progress through the game is like non-traditional combat, because obviously being an overpowered character, it would not be difficult for you to just one-shot everything, but that's not really the point. I don't know. It's like you said, this has potential. I would like to see more people talk about this just so, you know, we can get more of a read on how this game is, what people think of it. But I like it on the outset. It has I think it's on sale for like 10% off just for its release. So if people want to try it, there you go.
Yeah. I'm with you. I am always for games that are experimenting a little bit more with how to shake up, you know, video game progression and all that. And I love the pixel art aesthetic that they're doing with it. It seems like very vibrant and seems like it has a lot of unique personality to it. I'm really curious to see how this one plays out for sure. And this one is out now. Another game that came out this week, this one has been on my backlog for a while, actually. I've had a copy on PC forever, but I've never gotten around to it. It's called Ken Follett's The Pillars of the Earth. And I wouldn't be surprised if not a lot of folks have heard of it. Ken Follett, I guess, is known for his books. He's like an actual writer. Oh. And so he was involved in the writing of this game. This is a narrative-driven adventure published by Daedalic Entertainment. And it is, what's interesting is it's less of a point and click adventure and more of a like Telltale style story is from what I've heard. And I think that's notable because we don't get a ton of that in like the fantasy realm. This is also a direct adaptation of the book it's based on, The Pillars of the Earth.
Oh.
So I can see that appealing to a lot of people who are fans of his work.
Yeah, no, that's a super interesting idea. I don't know if that's something we've really seen at all. Like a video game adaptation of a book, but in a way where it's just supposed to be focusing on retelling the story, as opposed to trying to make like an actual, I guess more traditional, like an action game or adventure game or strategy game, just being like being a narrative game based on an existing narrative.
Right. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind when I think of book adaptations is The Witcher, but that's not really,
yeah,
you know, the type of adaptation we're talking about here. This is more of, I would say, probably like an interactive novel is probably a better way to sell this one.
Right.
But with more choices, and there's a lot of animation in this game too, so I hesitate to call it just like a visual novel. Like if you watch this game in motion, I mean, it all looks like it's just been painted, and it just looks really just beautiful. Voice acting is great. So this might finally be the time I cross this one off my list. We'll see. One other fun tidbit about this game is that its orchestral soundtrack was recorded by the Philharmonic Orchestra in Prague.
Oh, wow. So
there you go.
Nice.
Yeah, this is not a small budget project, it seems like.
No, it's interesting. I mean, I would assume to get the rights to the novel, that alone would require a decent amount of budget.
Right. But yeah, this one came out a while ago, so I feel like I first remember hearing about this game 2017 or 2018, so I'm not sure why they're just now bringing it to the Switch, but hopefully it lands well for folks. This next indie game that I want to shout out is called Rhythmos. Super cool font. First takeaway. No, I'm just kidding. This is an interesting, they call it a music puzzle game. It looks very relaxing and very not stressful, at least in the early stages. I'm sure it's the kind of thing that ramps up over time. But your whole goal is to create little paths for this little dot to go around. And then as you make paths, different pieces of the environment start connecting to each other, and you end up making music while you're solving these little puzzles.
Yeah, it has strong Tetris Effect vibes to me.
Really? Tetris Effect?
Well, the idea of like the whole musical theme of it, where it's responding to what you're doing on screen, and the point of it is more to be kind of like just an experience as you watch how the world interacts with what you're doing. That's kind of the vibe it gives me.
Ah, okay. Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Yeah, it's definitely very surreal in that kind of way. It does kind of look like, I don't know how I would exactly describe it, but like if you picture like a Rubik's Cube, but like a Rubik's Cube made of different things that make noise, that kind of seems like that's your play environment, basically. Right. And I don't know, I could see it like maybe losing its appeal kind of fast, but it also seems like there's a good amount of different environments, and I could see it being kind of just like a pleasant, kind of chill musical experience.
Yeah, it definitely seems like something that's supposed to be very, like you said, just kind of chill. The fact that you get like information on a whole bunch of different instruments that you can use to make the music makes it seem it's supposed to be something that you're supposed to just relax to, which it's always nice to have games like these. You need something, yes, to kind of de-stress every now and then.
Yeah, I agree for sure. And then last game I want to shout out in this week's releases is a point and click adventure game called Brock the Investigator, where you play as an actual alligator. It's Brock the Investigator, capital G. Hopefully that clears things up a little bit. Looks pretty charming, actually. He's just very, I'm a little like shocked by like how like gruff his voice is, this like very cutesy looking alligator character. But I'm not opposed to the idea of solving mysteries as this, I don't know.
No, I mean, I agree. It reminds me of like Spy Fox or Freddy Fish, I guess, like those,
yeah,
humongous entertainment games, just in terms of the art style, the anthropomorphic animals, the point and click. It does seem like it has some,
100% right.
It feels like it has some degree of like beat 'em up elements to it, which I guess is supposed to be part of like the unique hook. but it all looks very
unique
charming.
Hook. Yeah, no, they call it a punch and click. So yes, there are some beat 'em up elements to it. They do say there's also an easy mode that if you want to skip the combat section, then you can and just play it as a traditional point and click. But I mean, I think that is actually an interesting combination because I like point and clicks, but the pacing can be a little slow for some people. And for me to like get really invested in a point and click, the story's got to be really, really good. But I think like adding in some beat 'em up gameplay to that would definitely make for a pretty engaging combo.
Right. It can be a nice.
Okay, that one was not intentional, I promise.
But yeah, no, I agree. This looks like a neat little mix, and the art style seems good. The voice acting is certainly interesting, so.
Interesting. Fully voice acted, though, so, yeah. You know, you're at least getting the full experience. So yeah, those are most of the big releases of the week. Overall, smaller week, some cool indie projects. I don't think anyone is complaining about not having enough to play in the month of March now. It does feel like this is kind of the exception to the rule. We're still getting a lot of big releases one
March
after another,
is the new February.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Well, before we wrap up for the week, we will end with our recently renamed segment, Refresh Rates, where we talk about what we've been playing lately. Nicholas, what have you been playing this past week or so?
So two main things. First of all is I buckled down and played through basically all of Kirby's Return to Dream Land Deluxe. So I've beaten the game, I've done, I think, everything I can do in the Mary Magdalene mode, and I've played through the epilogue. I'll probably still play the game a bit more because I would like to complete the extra mode and the arena modes, just so I can completely finish everything the game has to offer. But
sure.
For the most part, I'm done with the game and I'm pretty satisfied with what I played. And then the other thing is that there was a big run event in Splatoon 3 that happened this weekend, and so I've just been kind of experiencing that and trying that out.
Yeah, let's talk about that Kirby game, because yeah, I also finished it. I have a review coming up. Well, it should be up by the time y'all are listening to this, so go read it. There's also a video version if you're interested. But yeah, so you say that you feel like you went through everything you could do in Mary Magaland, and how much content was that for you? Because for me personally, I bounced off those sub games pretty quickly. I mean, it just didn't feel. I know they're just supposed to be small little diversions anyways, but even as that, it didn't really feel like there was enough for my taste personally to like create this whole extra mode around,
right?
You know?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think it was definitely making extra mode out of it was more of just a personal developer choice rather than something that was really needed, because it's true that at its core it is just playing these relatively short mini games. When I meant that I did everything in it, I meant that I went for all of the missions, like basically the achievements in the mode.
Oh, okay.
And so I did all of those.
That's some dedication.
Yeah. And that was pretty engaging. There's some of them that really require you to learn how to play the games. And so you end up really kind of getting into the weeds a bit on them and really practicing, which can be pretty fun. And the other thing is that all of the games are multiplayer, but even a good amount of the missions can be obtained in multiplayer as well. So I did quite a few of them with a friend in local co-op, and that adds a lot. Like, obviously, playing minigames alone, there's only so much fun you can get out of that for the most part, especially when you aren't really getting a whole bunch of tangible rewards for it. But as soon as you add another person or two into the mix, it becomes far more enjoyable.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's generally true, and I feel like this was, like, an attempt to give these games a little bit more structure for people who wanted to play them in single player and have some more interesting progression behind that, and I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed it. For me personally, I don't feel like there's enough depth to a lot of these sub-games to warrant playing through them, you know, a dozen times or so to get all the missions completed, but, you know, I do appreciate that they at least tried to add in this progression path for people who want to do that.
Yeah.
I will say, I did like enjoying, I did like unlocking the different masks for Kirby and having him change his voice. And just like, all right, I'm going to whip out this Waddle Dee mask in the middle of this incredibly difficult boss fight.
Yeah.
And just make him sound like Waddle Dee for the next 20 minutes.
I did really like the incorporation of masks and how those were tied to progression. That was a neat little addition that they didn't really have to do, but I think it does add some character to the game, and it gives the minigame mode more of a reason for existing. Also, just think in general, the fact that we have 10 different sub-games, that is still pretty notable. I think on average, Kirby games usually get like 3 at most. So having 10 is still like, there's still a good amount of diversion here, even if not all the games are super, super deep. It's still something
right.
that you can kind of be entertained by, especially if you have a group of friends with you.
Yeah, just don't go in expecting Mario Party or anything like that, yeah. would be my advice.
Well, unless you're expecting like the top 100.
Sure, but with 10% of that.
Yeah.
Kirby, the top 10.
I mean, yeah. Kirby makes up for the other 90.
There's an argument to be made with that. I will say I'm really just fascinated by the new kind of minigame thing they added called Samurai Kirby 100. Mm-hmm. I don't really know like what to make of it exactly, but it is literally it's the Samurai Kirby minigame, but you play it against 100 other people.
Yeah. No, I mean, Hal has some weird ideas sometimes, just some kind of funny experimental ones. I mean, even like Kirby's Dream Buffet kind of falls under that category, and this is definitely one of those kind of experimental concepts. I don't know if this is like a precursor for anything. I don't know what they would do with this if they're going to expand on it.
I don't know either,
but it's certainly something.
It fits in with the, you know, the whole Tetris 99, yeah. and you had Super Mario, you know, 100, and now we've got Samurai Kirby 100 to finish up the Holy Trilogy. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, were you able to play through the Magalore epilogue?
I did. Yeah. And you know what? I think overall, I enjoyed it. Like, as a 2 to 3 hour experience, you know, I think it's a good, solid package. I wouldn't buy the game specifically for it.
Yeah. You know, it is short.
I think, yeah, it is short. I did like the progression that they added for it. I thought it was interesting, kind of choosing how you want to upgrade them over time. It wasn't quite as non-linear as I expected. Mm-hmm. Like, for the most part, you're unlocking stages in the same order. There are some, like, bonus stages that, you know, depending on how you upgrade Magalore, may or may not become accessible right away. But, like, ultimately, you probably will unlock everything and see everything no matter how you upgrade it. But I did enjoy just the overall flow of it. I thought it was a good little package.
Yeah, I agree. I think the thing about it that kind of shocked me the most is the lore from it. Like, the final boss and the ending is genuinely not what I expected, especially the fact that they kind of like they tie the ending of the Magalore epilogue into Super Kirby Clash and basically make that game canon, which just boggles my mind.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the
I never played Super Kirby Clash, so yeah, I wasn't aware of this.
I don't think this is a spoiler or anything, but in Super Kirby Clash, you have a Magalore who sells you the in-game currency, which are gem apples. And he has, like, that kind of white and green color scheme. And so this is a direct connection where, I mean, again, not really a spoiler, but at the end of the epilogue, that's kind of the character role that Magalore takes on. And so it directly leads into, apparently, the events of Super Kirby Clash, which, again, is not, like, that's not the kind of thing I would have ever expected them to canonize. But here we are.
Yeah, it's a little strange. Yeah. Man, that final boss, though, I gotta admit, it kicked my ass. I had to try that several times.
No, yeah, that came out of nowhere. I'm looking forward to trying it out in the True Arena, because I've heard that they added it to that. So, that'll be interesting. Yeah,
I think I do understand, like, why Kirby games have this reputation for being too easy. And, like, yeah, like, if you're just trying to get through the base game and not really explore or anything, like, I could see it. But there were some fairly tough, I think, like, hidden challenges tucked away, even in the main campaign. And then I think the Magalore epilogue, while not, like, overly difficult, does have some challenging moments. And so I think the challenge is there for people who want it. And if especially if you're jumping into that extra mode, like you said you're going to do, that, you know, that basically it drops your health to 40%. There's more enemies. There's, you know, some extra boss battles, I think, tucked in there.
Yep.
Or kind of some reworked things. So the difficulty is definitely there for people who want it. All right. And you said the other thing you were playing this week was the big run mode for Splatoon 3?
Yeah, they hosted another big run. This one was introduced a new King Salmonid, basically like a new boss called the Horror Boros, which has the most, like, human scream. It's honestly a little terrifying.
Oh, is this like the whole goats yelling like humans trend, like, all over again?
Kind of, except, like, genuinely a little scary. I'll send a link later, but it's something. And that's been fun. I'm still kind of, as much as I like the idea of playing Salmon Run in these multiplayer maps, because it just provides a very different experience, still not a fan of how the whole reward structure is set up. The fact that you have to be in, like, the top 5% to score, like, the highest tier of rewards just kind of feels weird. It's like putting you in competition with every other player in a mode that's inherently cooperative and artificially kind of limiting how many players are even able to get, like, the highest tier of rewards in the first place, which I don't know if that's necessarily what you want to do for, like, these big community style events. But, I mean, regardless, the core gameplay loop is fun. I'll probably hop in and do a few more before the event ends, like, once we finish recording. So I have been enjoying myself, even if I have a few gripes with it.
Yeah. So I know, like, in Splatoon 3, you can do Salmon Run anytime, but the big run is still, like, locked to events, right?
Yeah, these are basically the Salmon Run equivalent of Splatfests. So for, okay, like, 2 days, basically one weekend, you will have Salmon Run stage will be locked to one specific, like, regular multiplayer stage. In this case, it's been Inkplot Art Academy. And so during this weekend, you will only be playing on that stage, and the goal will be to get as many golden eggs in one shift as possible. And based on how many you earn, you'll get different tiers of rewards. So there's the lowest tier, which is below 50, then higher up, it's in the top 50%, then the top 20%, and then the top 5%.
Gotcha. Well, I'm glad that this mode seems to have some substance, at least for you. And, you know, I can see it being one of those things where, like, eventually, you know, Splatfest and stuff are going to stop with this game, I'm sure, as along with everything else. But, like, with the big run mode, it sounds like there's actually some unique gameplay kind of locked behind that.
Yeah.
And so I think if that were to, you know, kind of stop along with the Splatfest, that might be a bummer for some people. But, I mean, hopefully people are enjoying it now.
It makes me wish that we had these maps available normally, because they are genuinely really fun maps. I think because the idea is to have your players get, like, the highest score possible, not just to win, the maps are made to be a little bit easier to navigate. So you can win more consistently, which in a way also just makes it more fun.
Of course, yeah.
But they're only really available for, like, this 48-hour duration. So it is what it is.
Well, get in now while you can. Well, it's probably too late. But
yeah, no.
Get in for the next one.
Yep.
If you want to shoot some giant creatures.
Yep, some big fish.
Some big fish. At least for my part this week, on top of finishing Kirby and writing that review, I've been reviewing another game that's embargoed, so I can't talk about it this week. But the other thing I've been kind of jumping into a little bit, not as much as I would like, I want to play a lot more of it. So I was very lucky last week. I picked up a PlayStation VR 2 headset. I love virtual reality. I think the technology is awesome, and I am always, like, excited to try, like, you know, whenever there's like a big new like killer app experience in VR, I really want to like at least try it, because I feel like it's one of those areas of gaming right now where technology is just really always pushing things forward in that area. And we're getting some really cool stuff. And so, yeah, one of the first games that I really made sure to try was Gran Turismo 7. Because for those of you who don't know, they took the entirety of this game and put it into VR. So you can play through every track, you know, every car has been modeled and playable in VR. And man, it is just an incredible experience on this VR headset. I mean, not only does this thing have some of just like the crispest VR that I've seen, the sense of speed when you're playing a racing game like this in first person, when the graphics and stuff are this clear, I mean, you really feel like you're driving a car. It's shocking.
I would have expected it to be something that could get you motion sick just because of the disconnect.
Yeah, well, it does affect everyone differently. I mean, I will say that I was definitely feeling like, I wouldn't say overall nauseous, because I do play a lot of VR, but like there are some, like, for example, like I was racing a car on the Daytona 500, which is, for those of you who aren't familiar, is like the big American NASCAR speedway that you're probably used to seeing when you think of NASCAR. And when you're going on those like really steep turns where your whole car is on like a 30 degree angle, you really feel it. And I was like, I felt myself like instinctively kind of like rotating my body as the car was on this kind of slope. Cause it was like, that's what you would do, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it's a really crazy experience. I wish the VR integration went a little bit deeper, because you can't really, like, you play with just a normal controller, so you can't really, like, reach out with your hands and touch stuff,
mm-hmm.
But the actual racing in it is just phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, you said it was basically the entire game that was converted, right?
Yeah, in the sense that it's, like, they haven't cut any content for this mm-hmm. VR version.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty cool. That's not something you necessarily see all the time with VR versions of existing games.
Right. It does still kind of feel like, I mean, clearly it was a game that was not really built for VR. Like, they tried to say that it was, but, like, all the menus and stuff are still very much in 2D. Like, it's not a complete, like, I wouldn't say the best representation of, like, how to make a game specifically for VR.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, none of that really matters too much when what most people are here for is the racing. And yeah, it's really cool being able to get up close to the models of these cars too and see all the detail and everything.
Yeah. No, I mean, it sounds good. Out of curiosity, what makes, I guess, Gran Turismo specifically unique among car racers? I don't really have much experience with racing games in general outside of, like, Mario Kart, which I don't know if that really counts.
No, I mean, that's okay. I mean, it's, yeah, there are a lot of racing games out there. And I have not actually played a ton of Gran Turismo. This is the first one I've ever really played. You know, I've always, when it comes to more, I guess, like, realistic racers, I've always enjoyed typically more, like, arcadey experiences, like Need for Speed,
mm-hmm.
A little bit of Burnout, you know, stuff like that. But the appeal for something like this is that it's supposed to be just a very grounded simulation of what it's like to actually drive a car. And Gran Turismo in particular, you know, while there are a lot of, like, race cars and stuff, they're much more interested in just, like, the entire history of the automobile, which is, like, to give you some context, when you boot up this game for the first time, you get to do one race, and then they make you watch, like, an 8-minute video about, like, the history of the automobile, like, from the start up to the modern era. And the first car that you, like, unlock in the game is not, like, this, like, fancy supercar. You have to pick from one of three, like, Japanese subcompact cars. Like, a Prius, like, a Honda Fit. Like, it's very different.
Mm-hmm.
But they give you a lot of, like, details about the cars that you're driving. And you actually learn a lot about, like, the history and, like, why these cars are notable. And because this is more of a simulation, you know, it's very much like if you go and you do some of the options, like, so you have your races in this game.
Right.
But you also have what they call license tests, where you can go in and they teach you how to do like very specific driving maneuvers, and like here's the proper way to drift and here's the proper way to do this and this. And so it's a much like deeper, I think, like mechanical experience if you really want to get into like the physics of the driving and have something that feels very grounded in that way.
Okay. You know, I mean, that sounds like certainly something that sets it apart. I like the idea of actually, like you said, having like history behind the car and a bit more information that goes into more depth about that.
Yeah, it's certainly not like for everyone's taste. Like, I think overall, I do prefer the more kind of just fast-paced arcade style racers for most of the time. But there is something that's really satisfying about, like, I mean, you can really feel like they put in a lot of effort to make all the cars in this game feel very distinct from each other. They all handle differently. They all have their own quirks and their own sounds. And so, like, for people who are, like, quote-unquote car people, I mean, you can't really do much better than this on a console. And certainly for VR, I would say. All right. Well, I think with that, that wraps up our show for the week. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. This has been another episode of Nintendo Everything Refresh. If you like what you hear, please spread the word. We are on every streaming service. We have a video version over on YouTube and Spotify. Tell your friends. Let them know we're out here. And beyond that, we'll be back at you next week with everything new and exciting in the world of Nintendo. See you guys later.